What's up, guys? Coach S. Welcome to the Warrior Martial Arts, the Way of the Warrior, the Bushido, I don't really know yet, podcast. I assume I'll make a decision by the time I post this, so you'll know the name of the podcast. Any suggestions in the comments? It's early days, so I'm up for changing it. The concept of this show is to do a slightly more long form and relaxed conversation about martial arts. So my YouTube channel, Warrior Martial Arts, that you're on if you found it, or this podcast if you found it, it focuses primarily on what I know, which is striking. And then I try to broaden out to cover topics that would be relevant to you regardless of the martial art that you chose to practice. And I do drills, which are generally striking based. I have a background with grappling, but my expertise is very much in striking. So I like to stick to my expertise. I think there are far more qualified people out there putting videos out on jiu-jitsu, judo, and the grappling side. So I stick to my strengths. And beyond that, I also like to do equipment reviews, and I like to answer those questions that people have. You know, how do I get good at this? What do I do about that? How do I improve at this? General martial art, and therefore extending into life advice. Generally, the videos are around 10 minutes long, you know, YouTube algorithm and all that stuff. But I thought it would be nice for us to do a more relaxed long form podcast. A, so you can get to know me a bit better, because, you know, it's hard to come across. And it's hard to get your character and yourself across in these videos where I want them to be informative. So, you know, in 10 minutes, I want to make sure that you guys learn something. I don't want to rabble on, but I have a tendency to rabble on. So I thought, let's find a place where I can rabble on. For those of you that enjoy the more long-form discussion, don't worry, the regular videos will continue. This is bonus content, I guess, for you guys who just want something to listen to and enjoy martial arts in that more long-form context. Make sense? It's also a real chance for you guys to ask your questions and get a more in-depth answer, something more specific. So down in the comment section, via our Instagram, find me, ask a question, and I'll endeavor to give a more full answer and also just a more kind of off the cuff. You know, the videos, I try to do a little research. I try to do a little note taking beforehand and refine my ideas before opening my mouth. But the idea for this is less refined. Just off the cuff, what's on top of my head, I'll try to spit it out. I thought I'd start today with it being episode one, with just a quick little background on me. I don't want to make this all about me. I don't, I'm not too into being self-indulgent like that. But I think if you're going to listen, then it's probably a good idea that you know who you're listening to. And if any of you were curious from watching the YouTube channel about who I am and what I do, then I thought I'd answer it. I'm from England. I go by Az. My full name is Asil. It's a Turkish name, but trying to get English people to call me Asil and pronounce it correctly. A very long time ago, it switched to Az, and that's just what everyone knows me by, including my own parents. That's just what I go by. I run a kickboxing school here in London, freestyle kickboxing, and we'll discuss what that is for anyone who's unsure, because it's got a bit of a complicated history, I guess, and it's sometimes unclear to people how it differentiates. As well as kickboxing, I've got a background in Wadaru Karate, so I've got a black belt in Wadaru Karate. I practice and train regularly in Muay Thai, in K1 style kickboxing, which is what I used to enjoy competing in back in the day. I've also done and continue to train in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA. I'm generally a big martial arts fan. And that's kind of what I do and what I have access to. And I do that full time. I teach full time in London. And then beyond that, this is what I'm trying to do is create this YouTube channel and create this podcast and basically just provide more content and information for people. The origins of all of this stuff especially this online, was really, it was born out of the COVID-19 pandemic. For any of you that are martial artists, I assume all of you are, you're listening to a martial arts podcast, otherwise you're just a bit strange, you probably have experienced firsthand the effect this pandemic has had on your schools. Whether you teach or you train, our industry has been hit hard by COVID, real hard. You know, we were some of the first things to be closed, understandably, because of the contact, and we're some of the last things to be reopening. Now, in England, we're at a stage now, I consider us very fortunate, we are reopening, we are getting back to contact, and that's great. But I know parts of the States and other parts of the world, other countries are nowhere near getting back to it. And my heart goes out to all the schools that are trying to keep their doors open, that are trying to, you know, pay their rents with no one in there paying the money. And of course, it goes out to all of you guys because it's frustrating. It's hard not being able to do the sport that you love. It might be your only form of fitness training. So you might have put on some weight. It affects your emotional health, your emotional well-being. It's rough. So through this pandemic, I started running online classes for my members only as like a substitute, because for a lot of them, they're like that. You know, it's their life. They didn't know what they'd do without it. So I wanted to provide something. So I set up this setup in my living room. If you're on the audio, you might not be able to, you won't be able to see it. But I've got mats and I've got a freestanding bag and I've got this camera set up. And basically I taught classes from my living room for the best part of a year through the pandemic. And then whilst doing that, I started playing with the idea of creating YouTube content. I've always loved YouTube in general. I was kind of brought up on people like old school Elliot Hulse videos. If you don't know who that is, if you go look at him now, well, I'll just touch on this. If you go look at Elliot Hulse now, you'd think I was a madman for listening to him. He's kind of gone through some phases, but back in the day, he was like the old school kind of daddy fitness on YouTube. Scooby was another one of the old school guys. I really enjoyed the fitness side of YouTube. Martial arts on YouTube wasn't much of a thing. My first experience with it was Fight Tips, which is now, I think, the biggest martial art YouTube channel. Shane from Fight Tips, great channel, amazing content. And now it's really expanding. There's loads of just amazing channels. Wonderboy, Liam Harrison, the names are all escaping me now that I have to try and recall them as it does. But there's some great ones, Hard to Hurt. So I wanted to get in on it. I not from really a business point of view. We're nowhere near making any money. But I wanted to get into this space because this is what I realized through COVID-19. I realized that there's no real sense in keeping all your knowledge secret, or, you know, you have to come and pay me for my classes to get the information. Because in real reality, I actually think the primary reason that you should go to a physical martial arts school and learn is the community. It's the sense of family. It's that group dynamic that cannot be replicated online. So no matter what, when it comes to things like this, where people are teaching online or people are providing free content or free lessons, it's not going to disrupt the market in the sense that it still, no matter how well you do it, it can't compare to going to a school, being part of that class environment, being in that training room. There's nothing like it. Thank God, there's nothing like it. So I loved that, and I realized that I could do this as well. I can have my classes, which are growing great, but on top of that, I could just provide content and reach a wider audience because I love teaching. I love passing on information. I love discussing martial arts. So I thought, why not? Here we are. Episode 1, that's me. I thought I'd let you know. That's the kind of introduction. We're not going to go there again unless any of you have any specific questions. Feel free. I was trying to think of what are the topics that I wanted to cover on this, because like I said, I come from a striking background, but I want to provide content for anyone who enjoys martial arts. So if you're a jiu-jitsu practitioner, judo, karate, taekwondo, muay thai, boxing, I always count boxing, by the way, and wrestling as martial arts, even though they're often not grouped with it, that you could get some value. So I want to talk, you know, more broad topics. This is the one that came to mind, and this was based off of a video I did. I did a video, one of the earlier ones on my channel, that was about street fighting. Specifically street fighting, by the way. And it was basically just expressing my disdain for it. The fact that I don't like it, I don't approve of it, I won't promote it, I won't offer you, I won't do any videos on, you know, this technique is best to win a street fight and all the rest of it. I guess maybe I didn't make it clear in the video just based off of some of the comments. Maybe I didn't differentiate between the concept of self-defense and street fighting. Self-defense being, and this can happen in the street, is your physical well-being or that of the ones you love is in jeopardy, and you need to use your martial arts training in order to protect yourself or protect others. Very different from what I was talking about in terms of what I hate and can't support, don't like, don't want to see, which is street fighting, which is, you know, for whatever reason, may it be financial, that someone's actually, you're going to get paid, someone's betting on it, or just for respect or, I don't know, kudos, some form of credibility. This idea of fighting for the sake of fighting in the streets. The reason this has come to mind, I was trying to think of the occasions, or the only one occasion where I've had to use my martial arts outside of a formal setting, as in outside of competition or outside of training. And I've only ever had to defend myself one time. And I thought I'd share that story because some people find it interesting. And then I thought that's what we could discuss a bit more, was this whole concept of the difference between street fighting and defending oneself. And when it comes to then learning a martial art, take the sport side out of it in terms of competition. Let's say that you are learning martial arts for the idea of self-defense, or you're supplementing your training to prepare yourself for self-defense. Is that different? Is there a difference between me training to defend myself where necessary, or training to win a street fight? Because the two are the same in the sense that we're going to make the assumption that there's no weapons involved. You've got the same weapons available to you. Your fists, your elbows, your knees, your feet, your head. You know, that's the tools are the same. But the rules of engagement are also the same to an extent. But the situation's very different in terms of how you've ended up there. And I guess the big differentiator is the stopping point. Street fighting, from what I've seen of it online, if you ever do watch videos, there's an unwritten code to it most of the time. Whereas if you knock the guy out or you choke them out or whatever, generally the fight is done. You know, people will step back. In self-defense situations, a lot more, you'll see it go further because there's more of an emotional element to it, in the sense that someone is trying to threaten your life or trying to steal from you or threatening someone you care about. There's this heightened level of emotions. And this is where you hear these stories of people who are defending themselves and end up killing the person or really harming them and then getting in trouble themselves with the authorities. This is the story of me when I had to use self-defense. A quick bit of background on it. My self-defense training when this happened, I was 15 at the time, was very much in the realm of Bushido. For anyone who hasn't heard this term before, Bushido, this is the idea of just garbage martial arts. It's being taught stuff that's really not truly viable. It works in a very succinct vacuum, as in if my partner plays along and we demo the technique works, but very difficult to apply in a real life situation, especially against someone who's physically more capable than you, a bigger person, or someone with any real kind of relative fighting experience. Now, I was fortunate enough that at the time, I will age myself here and say we were in, not great at maths, the early 2000s. The general view of martial arts for the wide public was relatively unknown still. The UFC, which I think has brought martial arts to the forefront of a lot of people's minds who otherwise it wouldn't have, was still very much in its early days, in its infancy, in terms of worldwide recognition. Again, think London, England. For us, the UFC didn't get to us until Michael Bisping, Conor McGregor. So at this stage, it was very much a niche thing. So you could walk around, but what I'm saying is you could walk around with some Bushido knowledge and still apply it because people just didn't know. So this is what happened. I was actually walking to training. So I would get the bus from my house. It was about a 30-minute bus journey. And then I'd have to walk this last stretch, which was just down a main road. And then I'd turn and I'd be at the hall and I'd be at training. So I had my big kit bag over my shoulder. I was a skinny rake of stuff when I was 15. Pretty much the same as now, just less hairy, but not much less. And I had this cheap watch. I mean cheap, £5, you know, $6-7 at the time. I don't know how you want to convert it, but cheap watch, worth nothing. And I'm walking down the road and I'm holding my bag and this guy stops me right in front of me and says, "Give me your watch." And I got really confused at first because I was like, what a strange thing to ask. And I was like, "Give me your what?" And then I realized, oh, he's trying to mug me. He's trying to rob me. And I said, "No. No." And I'm like gripping my bag. So I'm like, you know, my watch is here. I'm gripping my bag at the strap and I'm refusing. And then he grabs my wrist in a way where, again, this is kind of where the funniness of the Bushido. He grabbed my wrist in a way where if it was a demo for this technique at a class, it would be like the perfect demo. He grabbed my wrist and he pulled it down in front of him. So he basically had grabbed me like this. On my wrist, on the watch side. And I placed him into a very basic wrist lock, which is thumb on the back of the hand here, and then you rotate, you know, the wrist doesn't want to rotate this way, you rotate it like this. And with all the adrenaline pumping through me, I just wrenched it, and you instantly heard a huge crack. He was very skinny, very slim. I'd say he was older than me, but not by much, so maybe he was late teens, early 20s. And I wrenched this wrist lock straight away with two hands, heard this huge crack from his wrist, and he just dropped down to the floor. And when he went into, I think he went into shock from just the pain and the surprise, because he was breathing something crazy. Yeah, like he was hyperventilating. He was gripping his wrist. He'd started sweating profusely, like instantly. He went from, you know, normal to wet. He was soaked through sweating. And for me, it was also instantaneous because I had no intention of hurting him like that. I didn't even think. You just do it because that's what you've kind of drilled. And he went down and I followed him down, not to ground and pound him, but to be like, "Are you okay?" Like, I started apologizing to this guy. He's just swearing and screaming, and like I said, it looked like he had gone into some form of shock at least. So I just grabbed my phone and I called an ambulance. I told them where he was. I didn't want to give my information. And then I kind of stood up and I said, "I've called an ambulance, just stay here." And I went. I just left him on the floor and I walked to classes. And I got to class and I must have been white as a sheet when I walked in because my coach just kind of took a look at me and said, "You okay?" And I explained what happened, and he looked me over, I guess to see if I was injured, because he could see I was a bit pumped adrenaline-wise. And I was like, no, I'm fine. And then just antithesis for what he was like. He was like, "All right then, let's go, let's train." And that was it. That was it done with. I never heard anything. There was no follow-up. I've never seen the guy since. I've trained in the same area, same place my whole life. Never re-encountered him. And that was the one time I used it. And when I look back on that situation, I hate it. I hate everything about it. I hate, in particular, my handling of the situation. Because when I think back to it, and maybe this is me getting older and softer and more reserved in my older age, you can look at it differently, right? But I look back on that and I'm like, why didn't I just give him this cheap watch? Why did I even for a moment resist or say no? Or I should have been just like, "Hey, go." You know, my kit, all I had on me, I mean, I had my phone, which at the time was, I mean, I can't actually remember what the phone was, but think whatever a phone was in early 2000s, and then think the cheapest possible phone. It could have possibly been a Nokia 3310. Like, I know that's way before that time, but I didn't have a lot of money growing. My family wasn't particularly rich, so I had an old phone. It was just to call my mum. And I didn't have it out because you couldn't do anything with phones other than play Snake and text at the time. So it was in my bag, I think. I should have just given him the watch when I look back on it. But then, you know, you handle it how you handled it. I should have stayed with him till the ambulance came. But again, I was a bit scared. I was a bit terrified of what he was going to do. I thought I'd made him angry. I hated the whole thing. I really didn't. It doesn't leave a good taste in my mouth. I'm not proud of it. I don't tell that story to brag. I don't tell that story to sound cool. I actually tell that story with a hint of a regret, if anything. And I use it. I use that story, and I use the lessons I learned from it in my teachings now. My school is very much a sports school. So our focus is on martial art competition, on kickboxing. But we discuss self-defense, especially with the kids' classes, because I think it's an important thing. I think it's a good thing for them to understand. It's important for them to know that the stuff that we're teaching them, you know, how to punch, how to kick, how to elbow, how to knee, that this stuff doesn't get used in school, that it's not... You don't suddenly have a right to go around kicking people in the head because they said something about your mum. And I use this story as a good example of, you know, not the whole great power, great responsibility thing. I don't have that big a head. But that we need to be careful about the way we approach these situations. That we need to be level-headed, which is, you know, so easy to say and so hard to do in those situations, especially when it's the first time that's happening to you. Like I said, I have never used it before, and I've never used it since. And I guess that's the big thing, is you don't really know how you're going to respond in that situation. You can like to think you know. You can like to think you know that you'll stay cool, stay collected, that you'll defend yourself, that you'll know what to do. But the situation's very different. Like I said, when this guy told me to give him my watch, I was just confused. The first thing I was not scared, was not angry, was not stoic. I was just baffled. I was like, what are you saying to me? Why are you telling me to give you my watch? And then you realize what's happening, and then the moment you realize, your adrenaline just starts pumping through you. And that puts you in a very different state of mind. And it's a very different level of adrenaline, or a very different delivery of adrenaline, to competition. In competition, adrenaline kind of ramps up. You know, you're warming up, you start seeing the opponent, you start putting your gear on, and your adrenaline kind of goes up in a curve, and it peaks by, you know, by the time you throw that first punch, you're pumped, you're full of it, right? This is more of like injection in the vein kind of thing. You go from 0 to 100 very quickly. And that's quite a crazy thing to experience. So you don't know how you're going to respond is the first thing. Now, where I'm going with this very roundabout discussion on this stuff is that was self-defense. And as much as I regret my handling of the situation, it was self-defense. This guy wanted to hurt me. I don't know what he would have done had I had just not known to put a wrist lock on him or didn't know what to do in that situation. But I was fortunate enough that I had enough knowledge, more than he had, that I was able to put him down effectively. Could have gone very differently. Say I'd done no training, say I still resisted. He might have had a knife on him or something else. We never got to that point to find out. It could have gone a lot worse. But it is self-defense. So as bad as I sometimes feel for the way I handled it, it's self-defense. I handled it. You know what I mean? It is what it is. But if in a street fight situation, and this is why I hate it, I hate street fighting so much, is these same things can happen and a lot worse. Someone can fall and crack their head on a pavement because they trip. You didn't even hit them, but you moved forward, they trip, they hit, they smash their head. And it's like, for what? For what? You're not defending yourself. You didn't need to do that. You didn't need to be in that situation. I don't like it. The hard part about the whole street fighting situation, because I'm not ignorant to this, is a lot of that comes from, because my response is go to a gym, go join a martial arts school and go train, and you don't need to fight in the street. You know, go experience that in a safe, controlled environment. But a lot of this street fighting happens in areas, neighborhoods, and from people who they don't have money to feed themselves, let alone join a martial arts school, let alone go to an MMA gym and get some training in. And a lot of the time, they don't know anything but fighting. They were brought up in violence. They grew up around violence. And all they have is violence. It's their answer for everything. It was the answer for everything raising them. It's how they got disciplined. It's how they saw their mum get treated. It's how they saw their dad behave. You know, violence is just prevalent in their lives. And then someone says to them, we'll put down some cash, $100, you fight this guy. Yeah, well, I know fighting. I know what I'm doing there. I know exactly what to do. I don't understand maths too good. I don't read too good, but I know how to throw a punch. And you're going to tell me that I throw this punch and I get this money? I get it. Yeah, I get why people would do that. I understand. And I think a part of what I'm trying to do moving forward is introduce a kind of community project to help kids like that get off the streets and put this energy, this anger, this frustration into a more constructive environment. And I've seen this done. I've seen this be effective. The boxing in the UK gets a lot more funding. So kickboxing is not currently, we're very close, but we're not currently recognized by the governing bodies in the country for sport, which is Sports England. Boxing, on the other hand, is, and therefore they receive a lot of funding. And a big part of that funding goes towards community projects. So I've seen a lot of it done with boxing in very kind of rough urban environments where they've done this free community training, and it's got these kids off the streets, it's got these kids out of trouble, and it's got them engaging with their violent tendencies. They're dealing with that stuff. They're bringing that stuff up to the surface, but in a safe and controlled manner. The argument against stuff like this is that it's going to do more harm than good, that you're teaching these kids how to be violent. You're teaching them to hurt people. So they're only going to go out and be worse. But it's just not how it goes. It goes to show people who are outside of this sphere the ignorance they have towards martial arts. There is still to this day, through the vast majority of people, a stigma attached to it that it's just violence, that it's just glorified violence. It's just fighting. which is, it's the furthest thing from the truth. The nicest people I know, I mean, in all fairness, the majority of people I know are martial artists, but the nicest people I've ever met are martial artists. They're dangerous, violent people, but the reality is they're good people. They're good people. They couldn't do enough for you. They do things for charities. They have families. They have kids. They do community projects, you know? And then they punch each other in the face. That's what it is. So I'd like to be part of the movement, if there is a movement, to get more people away from street fighting, to not glorify it, to not make it something that people should aspire to or find as a way out or as a solution. But at the same time, not being ignorant to the fact that for a lot of people, A, that's just how life is for them. They were dealt a bad hand and they're making the best of it. And that self-defense is a very separate issue. Interesting story on all this. Very recent story, very relevant story. Michigan in the States. I'm from the UK, but I've seen this. Michigan, I believe they are now, or they're trying to push through the requirement that all their police officers have to have a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I think this is great. I think this is a great thing. I think this is an awesome idea. There's, again, been a lot of pushback. That how is this helping? The idea, of course, is police reform. It's to help the police to not have to use excessive force, to not have to hit people with a nightstick, to not have to do the George Floyd situation and put your knee on their neck and pin them down until they die, but to give you a better understanding of how to subdue someone, how to pin, put them in a hold, cause them a level of pain and discomfort without necessarily causing any long-term damage or the risk of death. The pushback, of course, is that you're just making these police more dangerous. You're providing them more weapons, more ways of hurting and killing people. You know, that George Floyd situation is such a good example of, he basically choked him out and continued to choke him out until he died. So if he knew how to do a proper rear naked choke, your argument is that he could have done that even more effectively and killed him even quicker. It's messed up, right? We don't want that. But the counter argument is that if he had a better understanding of technique and martial arts, maybe he wouldn't have felt the need to be as excessive. However, we all, you know, that policeman was just a piece of crap, you know, he's just a bad person. And that's the big part, isn't it? That bad people are bad people. No matter what you teach them, they're going to do bad things. And just like I said, the nicest people I've met in martial arts, you know, come from martial arts. I've also met some real just nasty pieces of work, you know, very experienced, very capable, very well-trained, revered martial artists, but as people, just assholes. And I think that's the reality of any walk of life. Anything you do, anything you get into, there are going to be some people that are nice, and there are going to be some people that are assholes. There's no way around that. But I do think that what Michigan is doing is good. I do think it's beneficial, not only from the point of view of like I said, teaching them to subdue people, but I think generally police forces around the world, their expectation of fitness and the health of their officers is way too low. The UK is very guilty of this. The fitness test for the police here is a joke. It's nowhere near what it needs to be, in my opinion, for what the job is. The bar only seems to be getting lowered as opposed to being lifted. It's, you know, it's terrible. It's a tiny little run, I believe. There's a little grip test and it basically, you know, it's nothing. And I haven't checked it recently, but it's a few push-ups, it's a few pull-ups, it's a few sit-ups. It's anyone could do it. And that's the point, right? Because then they can recruit more officers. And you're seeing it more and more here, definitely in the States. Police that are really overweight. And I don't mean that in a body-shaming way for how you look, but I do mean it from a performance point of view. in acting in the line of duty, in being able to protect and serve and do your job, to pursue a criminal, to control someone without feeling the need to resort to using your weapons. Yeah, you know, in the States, using guns, using nightsticks, using all of this to get an advantage because you're at such a physical disadvantage. The other thing martial arts definitely does for this and for self-defense and for, I guess, you know, if we're going to talk about street fighting, is the biggest benefit is the confidence. It provides a level of self-belief and self-confidence in bad situations. What martial arts should allow you to do, if you're training at a good school, it should allow you to be put into regular, uncomfortable situations. It should allow you to get to a position where you think, I hate this and I don't want to be here, and then you push through anyway. And in doing that, in succeeding in that, you learn something about yourself and you develop that kind of grit of character. And I think this is the most valuable thing from martial arts in general. It's why I'm still an advocate for belt testing. There's a big push in recent years through, I think, mostly MMA, Muay Thai, Nogi, Jiu-Jitsu, where they say that belts are pointless, that we should just focus on performance. And to an extent, I agree. And there's definitely the McDojo side of it where it's just about making money off the belts. But I think the testing is a really valuable component. I know from when I did my black belt, I can look back on that weekend. For us, it was a 2-day course, and it was one of the most grueling things I've ever been through. And multiple occasions, I had the thought process of, I hate this. I don't want to be here. I want to quit. And then you pushed through. And I remember when I got to the end of that course and the course was done, the sense of elation and the sense of pride. Not because I didn't even know I'd passed at that point, but that you survived, that you made it through that grueling weekend of training. And I carry that with me. And then when I get into uncomfortable situations now, a lot of them don't compare. Like what people think are uncomfortable situations for me are not uncomfortable anymore, because I've been in far more uncomfortable situations. And the idea of being threatened now, you would have to be threatening me to a very high extent to get an emotional response out of me. Now, through my experience, through years of fighting people, through years of competition and training, I'm now at a state where I'd really have to feel in danger to start emotionally responding to you. And I think that's what the police in general, and people in general, I think this is like going back to the whole street fighting thing. A lot of these street fights can be avoided if there wasn't such an emotional attachment to the fighting, if it wasn't so charged. And I think a lot of that gets taken away when you've trained, when you've been uncomfortable in these safe environments. That carries over into life. And then it takes a lot more to get you going. When you got, we do a lot of sparring sessions, and the people that you need to watch the most in sparring sessions are the newbies. They're the guys who are new to the room, regardless of their experience, but it's the guys that are new to the room. And in particular, it's the beginners. Not necessarily because they hit harder. They are more wild, that's for sure. Like their technique is less refined, so there's more chance of them hurting you like that. But the big thing I'm always watching for is how they control themselves emotionally. Because a lot of my guys who are more experienced, they can take a hit and not let it trigger them emotionally. They'll take it and they'll go, oh, good shot, touch gloves, and they'll carry on. But beginners, people who are new to it, people who have never been hit in the face before, never experienced that uncomfortable environment, are very quick to get emotionally triggered. They're very quick to flip that switch and respond emotionally. What the hell, man? Push them off, throw the gloves off, leave the room, throw a little hissy fit. All of this stuff happens. And this is why when I've got new people in a sparring room, I like to spar them first because I know I can very much control myself. And then I go through a process of who I give them to, and I get progressively to the rougher guys. And, you know, I am a very controlled school. We're not about the heavy sparring. We're not about the hard hitting. I really try now anyway, and I'm going to do the next episode. I'll probably talk about this gym cancers. I got that term from Chujitsu, great Jujitsu channel on YouTube. Check him out. And he talks about removing gym cancers from the gym. So I've got a real policy for it now, and it's been working really well. So we got a good group of people, but there are people on the heavier end. There are people who hit on the harder side. So when I've got new people, I kind of put them through a progression to get them to this guy, so that by the time they get hit like that, they kind of can stay within themselves, not explode out, not overreact, not overrespond, keep their cool. And then I think this transfers outside. And that's what I think is one of the biggest benefits of training any martial art. Jiu-jitsu is great for this because you can be uncomfortable, really uncomfortable, for the entire session. From start to finish, you can have someone laying on top of you, holding you down. You're unable to move. You're unable to breathe. You feel like it anyway. You're sweating profusely, but you're safe. Nothing's really going to happen to you. You're just getting roughed up for like an hour. And I think that's a great thing to experience and realize that you can go through that and come out the other side and be okay. And kickboxing can do it too. Striking can do it too, especially the cardio element, the being pushed like that to the point where you feel like you're going to be sick. And then having a coach kind of just keep you on that edge between being sick and passing out and continuing on with the session. And again, you get to that end and you get that sense of elation, that sense of pride. You get filled with those endorphins because you made it through. And the only time I've seen people, when people lose their cool and they go out of the room, there's always regret that follows it. There's always, it's fine on the day. You're there, they're angry, they storm out. But every time we then have the follow-up conversation where they come back and they return to training, I always get that sense of they wish they didn't behave that way. They wish they didn't let their emotions get out of control. But and that's a learning experience in itself, right? That's them still learning, but learning the hard way and learning the way I'd rather they didn't. But what can you do? Guys, that's kind of all I have for today. I hope you've enjoyed this. I didn't want to ramble on way too much. I know I spoke about myself a lot on this one. I promise that's not going to be a consistent thing, other than trying to give my experience, because I think we should talk from personal experience and, you know, anecdotally about what we've been through. But comment below. Let me know if you enjoyed this, if you want to see it more. I will also get this uploaded at some point to Spotify and Apple Podcasts. So if you're just out and about and you just want to listen to these, they'll be available. Regular content's going to continue. Drill videos, equipment reviews, fighter breakdowns, all that stuff. This is just, consider it a little bit extra for the weekend. I'll try and upload this. This should hopefully be uploaded and out for Saturday. It's been nice talking to you guys. I hope you've enjoyed listening. I hope the audio quality has been okay. I'm testing some equipment out as we try to improve the audio on the channel. The last video I did a video on low kicks. I was happy with the video. Video looked great. But the sound quality was not great. So I'm aware of it and I'm working on it. Thank you for sticking with me and staying subscribed while I figure this stuff out. Let me know what you want me to talk about on the next one. Like I said, the topic I was going to bring up for next time, which has now escaped my mind. I meant belts, gradings, TMA, traditional martial arts. Maybe we can have a discussion about all that stuff. And I will see you on the next one. Peace.